This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And a Monday edition of the Mark Reardon Show. I used to play that song when Sue's here. She's not here, but I still like it, from Brooks and Dunn. And I did have a little musical thing to do as we get started here this afternoon, because there's a guy out there. My whole family loves Noah Kahan. Noah Kahan is a guy that has done a lot of collaborations with a lot of other artists. And what did you label that? For the Masters. There it is, right there. So they announced the Masters is in a couple of weeks. It's the weekend of the 11th, 12th, and 13th, and they have done a new version of Georgia on My Mind with Noah Kahan. Is a very soulful singer and singer-songwriter who has really blown up in the past couple of years. Just to know sweet song. I like that, because they're trying to, you know, get a little bit more contemporary at the Masters, even with those old traditions. Ethan's going to do Sue's News here in just a couple of minutes. I have a couple of topics that I wanted to do before that. A reminder, we have our Fish Fry Friday coming up on this Friday at Queen of All Saints on Christopher Drive. We had a great experience at Assumption last week. That is a big, big fish fry. I mean, they really all are. But Ethan, this was your, wasn't that your first experience with the fish fry?
Not only was it my first Reardon fish fry, it was my first fish fry ever. And
how is that possible?
I don't know.
Okay.
It was phenomenal. The food was amazing. I mean, it was packed.
Yeah, it was really packed, and the line was out the door. They do a lot of drive-through
out the door and around the corner, a huge drive-through. It was quite the process.
And then when I left at 6 o'clock, you know, they had to guide me out. They have people directing traffic. It's very, very efficient. I think you're going to see the same thing at Queen of All Saints. We are at St. Mary Magdalene in Brentwood on the 4th. And Ott's Tavern on the 11th. Look, we're halfway. We're at the halfway point already with Lent and our Fish Fry Fridays. We have Mike Gonzalez coming up here. This is interesting. We were going to have Mike on, Ethan, as you know, because you're pinch hitting for Fred, who's in Japan. Mike was going to join us on Thursday. Actually, if I remember correctly, he was in Panama, right?
He was.
I don't know that he's there anymore.
He's
but
not.
He is going to join us on a couple of topics, but then he just shared this, and he may not have been able to share this last week. Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's the chair of the Subcommittee on Delivering Government Efficiency, has written Mr. Gonzalez a letter saying the subcommittee on DOGE requests your testimony at a hearing on March 26th, I believe that's this Wednesday, of the Capitol Visitors Center. The title of the hearing is Anti-American Airwaves: Accountability for the Heads of NPR and PBS. Oh my goodness. This may be my favorite
you look
thing
in your lips?
All week. Yes, I am. Because it's ridiculously, you want to talk about fairness in, you know, sports with biological men playing against biological women. Let's talk about fairness in media, where you have a couple of huge entities out there which are supported by the taxpayers, and they no longer need to be supported by the taxpayers. So I can't wait to hear his position on that. One thing I was going to share here before we get started, I thought this was interesting, Ethan. I am in the camp that thinks, and I honestly don't even know why this hasn't happened more often, that schools should ban cell phones. Now, you're a little bit more recently out of high school than a lot of the people that are maybe listening right now, but they had to be pretty prevalent when you were in high school 10 years ago, right?
Yes.
8 years ago.
In fact, I remember at multiple different times while I was in high school, them saying like, okay, like we're going to become much more strict with the punishment for, you know, being seen with your cell phone. You can keep them on you, but you're not allowed to have them out at all.
Right.
And there were times when it felt like they would either at the beginning of the school year or the beginning of a semester, they would be very serious with it. And then, you know, they'd hand out, hand out detentions and you would get, you know, different punishment of whatever it may be. And then as the semester goes on, they would just stop. And it was almost like it was a battle that they couldn't win. So they just give up.
Well, the iPhone came out, I think in 2008. Not that we didn't have cell phones before that, but let's face it, that kind of changed a lot of things. And now you have a situation where some school districts are banning cell phone use. And I'm going to talk about LA Unified because I'm not very impressed with most things that come out of the left coast, including Los Angeles. But in the Los Angeles Unified School District, which has so many problems with, you know, absenteeism, with learning loss, et cetera, I think they've done the right thing here. They put a cell phone ban in effect in mid-February. So the use of phones is not allowed anymore to enforce the policy. Now, have you ever been to a show, like maybe at Stiefel or Enterprise, where a comedian says no cell phones and you have to put your phone in like one of those locked bags?
I haven't, but I'm aware of that.
So what they're doing here is University High and some other schools out there, they've turned to Yonder, which is actually a local company out there. They're the maker of a lockable pouch commonly used at film premieres and live shows and, like I said, comedians to foster a distraction-free atmosphere. So they're sealed with a magnet. They're the most popular choice among schools to enforce the policy. Some schools have given teachers cubbies where the students deposit their devices. Others simply require them to be powered down and stowed. But this is, you know, a different approach because it's the gray neoprene pouch. But here's what's happening. You know, these kids are pretty smart, right?
Yes.
Well, guess what they're doing? They're cheating the system.
How?
They have burner phones or something that's not a workable phone. They put it in the pouch. Sometimes, here's what they say. This one kid who I guess is allowed, they say, let's see if I get her name here, because Madison Thacker is a senior at Van Nuys High School of Performing Arts. And she says, after allowing my phone for 12 years, they're just going to take it away for 3 months. They should have started it at the beginning of the school year. Students just don't like change in general, which is true. Nobody likes change. Kids are going to find a way around this no matter what you do. So what she says is, as of today, I don't know anybody who has put their phones into a pouch. Now, she's able to use her phone because she's in charge of the Instagram account at the school, so she actually gets to, you know, be grandfathered in. But what she says is kids are putting in old phones, they're putting in burner phones, they're putting in battery packs, and most popular, calculators. So they're not even putting phones in there. They say there are various methods to break into the pouch via magnet with brute strength or using a pencil to pop it open. So I don't know if it's even working right now.
It's a good idea.
It's a great idea.
But here's the thing is kids are so freaking addicted at this point to their phones that
they're going to find a way.
They're going to find a way to work through it, work past it.
And that's part of the problem. So what they don't really address is the policy working in the schools any better where they're not using the pouches? Maybe it is. We'll find out. Let's do this here this afternoon without Sue.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Mark, it's been a minute. It's been a minute since you've done
Sue's News. It has been a little bit, right?
Well, Mark, today is National Cheesesteak Day. So I wish you a happy National Cheesesteak Day.
And I like a good cheesesteak every once in a while.
To all of those out there that celebrate with me, happy National Cheesesteak Day.
Would that be mainly people from Philadelphia or others?
You would think so.
Right.
Speaking of, there was some interesting stuff that went on in Philadelphia this past weekend with the NCAA Wrestling National Championships out there. We'll have to get into that here perhaps a little bit later. I know you have some audio on
that. Yeah,
there
was like a big upset.
They're calling it the biggest upset in college wrestling history.
Guy from Oklahoma City, right?
Oklahoma State, yep. Upset the number one heavyweight wrestler in the world, Gable Stevenson. So, yeah, we'll have to talk about that a little bit.
That might be suited for Audio Cut of the Day later as well, because that really is an amazing story. And he's in the military, and I guess he's going to be there for another couple of decades. Mm-hmm. So, really, kind of a crazy story.
Cool story, yeah. Sad news. Boxing legend George Foreman died on Friday. He was 76 years old. There's no word on the cause of death. And not only, obviously, everyone knows him for the phenomenal boxer that he was, but he also eventually, as we also know, became a savvy businessman. After boxing, he became famous for his George Foreman grill. He turned something that other business people laughed at into something that raked him a lot of cash.
Let me tell you something. Back in the day, I had a George Foreman grill, and I loved it.
I am George Foreman, and this is my lean, mean, fat-reducing grilling machine.
I'd really gotten popular on Madison Avenue. We'd done Doritos, McDonald's, and Meineke. Every commercial there was, we made a lot of money. People would pay you a lot of money to do a commercial. But then after a period of time, they move on to someone else. And finally, a friend of mine said, George, you're making all these other companies wealthy. Why don't you get your own product? And we looked around and found the grill. No one wanted to be bothered with it at all. They had names for it, jokes for it. Mm-hmm. But I took it, and they said, try that. And I didn't want to use it, but my wife insisted. She said, it works, George. And the grease really rolled off and it's still tender. I ate it. I said, boy, let's do it. But I never expected it to be so successful. And then all of a sudden, the checks just started rolling in. This thing sold over 100 million.
You end up being bought out for something like $140 million. At one point, checks were coming in for upwards of like $4 million monthly.
$5
million. Oh my God. So look, it's a success story from a variety of perspectives. And you don't have the, you know, perspective that a lot of us who are older. George Foreman was a mean SOB. I always recommend find the movie When We Were Kings, which is about the rumble in the jungle in Zaire in October of 1974. And it's an amazing movie about, you know, Muhammad Ali. Mm-hmm. And it's not just about boxing. It's really an amazing film. It's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen in my life. It won the Oscar in 1996. But when you had the juxtaposition from the George Foreman from, you know, that fight and in his boxing career with the commercials that were on with the George Foreman grill, that was rather unique. And I think it caught people's attention just in and of itself because we were used to this, you know, mean guy that was going up there smiling with his, you know, pudgy little face selling grills. And it was immensely, I don't know, it was that successful, but it was immensely successful. And I did have one.
$5 million a month.
Have you ever seen one?
No.
They're just kind of like a little grill with these slots of the grease. If you put a burger on there, you cook a burger right there in your kitchen. You don't have to put it on the grill. I mean, there were other things, I'm guessing, like it at the time, but they didn't have George Foreman's name on it.
That is unbelievable. Yeah. So rest in peace to George Foreman, 76 years old, passed away on Friday.
Watch that movie, When We Were Kings. And, you know, my friend, Gary Stromberg, who's been on the show before, Gary produced the music festival that went along with the Rumble in the Jungle. And it was very unique and challenging because the fight had to be delayed back then. So the music festival actually, I think, took place 3 weeks before the fight. And there was this issue with that. And then Gary, the story that Gary, I think you were here when he shared this. He's on this flight trying to get all these artists out of Zaire. And the pilot is not happy with the weight distribution. And he goes on the PA and he tries to get people to move around and say, we need to get, you know, more people to the back or to the front. I can't remember which one it was. And James Brown was having none of that. And he pulls a knife out on the plane in front of everyone, starts raising hell. He says, I'm not going anywhere. And they take off and they barely clear the trees. It's an amazing story. I've used it. Gary was on for either the last December, the previous December, we used him for, you know, best of.
Best of,
because
yeah,
it's an amazing story. It really is.
That is fascinating. I don't know how I'm supposed to move on from that because, I mean, I'm sure we could even continue talking about that. But
I would love for you to actually watch that movie because, yep, I always said that I wanted my kids to see that movie when they were in their, like, you know, upper teens or 20s. And I don't know that I ever forced them to watch it because it's got some great life lessons in there, too.
Mark, this next story is, I feel like, very catered to you. So I want you to think back to the last time that you stubbed your toe. Can you recall if you happen to drop any choice words? I know you're a big fan of choice words.
Hold on a second. Can I recall? I can absolutely 100% confirm without hesitation that I dropped an F-bomb. Sure.
74% of Americans swear when they stub their toe or experience abrupt physical pain, according to a new poll. That includes 32% who said sometimes, 24% said usually, and 18% said they always do. I have a feeling you probably fall into the always do category.
Well, I mean, it depends on the severity. If it's just something that kind of, you know, catches you off guard and it's just a little stub or something like that, you'd be like, damn. damn. Oh,
yeah.
Like,
I'm
but
probably
if it's
in
big
the,
enough, I think the F-bomb is coming out.
I think I'm in the sometimes, probably.
Right.
Another 14% said rarely, so they've done it too. Only 8% said that they never swear when they hurt themselves.
That's Fred.
Studies found...
That's Fred and Sue, if we're being honest, right? They don't swear when they do anything.
Well, how about this? Studies found that swearing can help with pain tolerance.
Thank you.
Only a third of people think that that is true.
Thank you. I think it's true.
1 in 6 people say that swearing in public is never acceptable, even if you're in pain. But here I have some alternative words for you that those people would say to use in the place of curse words. Okay, you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Shaboozy. Fraggle Rock. Mother Tucker Carlson.
Yes.
Mount St. Mary's. Sizzlin' Cybertrucks.
Kelly Clarkson.
Son of a Bitcoin. Philadelphia Cheesesteak. In honor of
today. Yeah.
Fits well. Funko Pop. Backman Turner Overdrive. And Ah Musket. So there you go. The top replacements, I guess, for cursed words. A group of guys in Georgia broke a world record on Friday with a basketball game that lasted 5 straight days. 121 hours and 3 minutes, to be exact. And they were able to sub in and out, so they did get some breaks. But what a grind. I mean, for 5 straight days, I mean, back and forth down the court. They did this to raise money for a charity called MOST, which stands for Men Opposing Sex Trafficking, which is a really cool thing to do it for. And they raised, get this, over $300,000.
You know, Kevin Wheeler's done some of that when it comes to record-setting baseball games here in
really?
St. Louis. I have a friend that I went to high school with, Chuck Williams, who was always involved in that as well. I don't know if they're currently in the, you know, Guinness Book of World Records, because what happens in a situation like this is someone sets the record, and then someone eventually decides, we got to break the record.
This one cracks me up. A 20-year-old Orthodox Jewish man from New Jersey is suing United Airlines because he claims the pilot yanked him out of a bathroom for taking too long. The guy yelled through the door when the pilot was knocking and said that he was constipated. He was having some issues, so they left him alone. He goes back, and he quite literally pulled him out. So now, according to the lawsuit, the pilot started screaming, demanding him to come out, broke the lock, opened the door. This guy's pants were still down at his ankles when he pulled him out into the main area.
And that sounds terrible, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there is something to be said here and there should be a lawsuit. But I always come from the school of thought that there's going to be two sides to that story. So what else happened there? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no,
because
totally.
Because on its face, it seems like it's a no-brainer. I don't even know why there would be a trial. They're going to write him a check.
Sure, exactly. Before we get into the random fact, I have to give a quick happy birthday to my favorite football player of all time, Peyton Manning, turning 49 today. He was one of my childhood heroes. Love Peyton Manning. 49 years old today.
I never liked him when he was a quarterback, but then I liked him more afterwards.
He's a funny dude.
Yeah.
These commercials are good.
Is it Peyton Manning or is it...
That's a good one.
Peyton Manning.
Yeah, the nationwide ones are good. I appreciate
those.
Finally, in Ethan's news, today's random fact. When Pixar was editing Toy Story 2, someone managed to accidentally delete a huge chunk of the movie. They miraculously found a backup, though. An employee on maternity leave had saved it so she could work on it at home.
Wow.
And that is today's random fact.
That would be probably
Ethan's
a significant save. There's no doubt about that. Thank you, Ethan. Sue is back on Thursday. Mike Gonzalez from Heritage coming up here. He's going to testify at a DOGE subcommittee hearing about NPR and PBS. That could be interesting. How about the Blues right now? Frank Cusimano will join us from KSDK in about 15 minutes to run down some hockey news. Also, we have opening day Thursday of this week already, and then we'll run down some of the college hoops, even though everyone's gone, that I really care about. Mizzou, Illinois. I even rooted for Illinois. Those of you who wear that ugly orange color, I rooted for your damn team because I thought they were being disrespected, and I hate Kentucky, and they couldn't get it done, unfortunately. But Tom Ackerman will talk a little sports in the next hour as well. He'll join us with his preview. He's on the KMOX side. Tom and I used to host opening day at Busch Stadium for probably 10 or 12 years when I was over there on that side of the building. Right now, back with us, a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, the author of BLM, The Making of a New Marxist Revolution, Mike Gonzalez, back with us. Hello, Mike. How are you? Happy Monday.
It's going to be happy Thursday. Opening day is around the corner. Can you imagine?
I can imagine, but Mike, we're very nervous here in St. Louis because we have high expectations from our team, and we're not very optimistic for 2025 in St. Louis.
Listen, I'm a Yankee fan. We lost Cole. We lost Hill. We lost Stanton. We got nobody, and yet I'm very optimistic because baseball season is about to begin, and I couldn't be happier.
No, I love it.
St. Louis is a ballpark I have never visited. I'm dying to go. I think I would love St. Louis.
Mike Gonzalez, here's a sincere offer for you. You come to St. Louis, and I will take you to a baseball game. We'll go up in the booth. We'll visit with John Rooney in the broadcast booth, and Ricky Horton will take great care of you because we do love our baseball. Oh, we're just hoping that it's going to be a little bit better than anticipated.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3, plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy!
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Because we're very passionate here in St. Louis.
I know. I like everything about St. Louis. I love baseball. I love Mark Twain. I love, you know, blues. I love barbecue. Everything about your state I love.
Awesome. Well, we're going to get you here hopefully soon enough. Before we get to some of the Black Lives Matter Plaza stuff, that's originally why I invited you on the show. You got a pretty nice letter here from Marjorie Taylor Greene, which has invited you to visit on Wednesday for the Subcommittee on Delivering Government Efficiency, DOGE. And the topic of the hearing is Anti-American Airwaves. I love this, by the way, Mike. Accountability for the heads of NPR and PBS. I cannot wait. Go get them, Mike Gonzalez. That's what I say.
You know what you just did? You just broke the news. You're the first, because they just made it public about an hour ago.
I love it.
And the head, you know, let me tell you who the other, there's going to be four witnesses. The Democrats have added the head of NPR in Alaska. I've been driving, and I think the guy's name is Ullman. Okay. And this is an act of desperation, because they used to say that you had to have, the reason why NPR and PBS, you know, had to receive a subsidy which you, Mark, could not receive.
That's right.
And even though it was very unfair to conservatives, they had to receive it because it was educational TV and educational radio. That is no longer the case. So they needed another excuse. The new excuse is, you know what? It's for hard to reach. It's for weather emergencies in hard to reach places, and it's for local coverage. So the new syllogism is, without NPR, you have deaths. So which means, you know, and without local coverage, you don't have democracy. Without NPR, you don't have local coverage. Without NPR, you don't have democracy. So this is just now what they're down to. I'm really looking forward to going there and making the case, the conservative case, as to why it is a travesty. It's travesty that we continue to do this.
Mike, what I've said, and I even told the dean of the University of Missouri Journalism School, my alma mater, Dean David Kirpius, this a couple of weeks ago, you don't have to take my word. You don't have to take Mike Gonzalez's word about some of the things that are happening in the media. Here, I'll just forward you Yuri Berliner's essay from, you know, a couple of years ago. Chew on that for a little bit. He was an insider at NPR. He knows everything. Is that going to be introduced at this hearing? Because it speaks volumes in and of itself, doesn't it?
I am going to quote richly from it in my written testimony. And obviously the oral testimony, my written testimony is like 6,000 words. The oral testimony is like 5 minutes, so it's less than 1,000 words. So I had to take out a lot of stuff. But I'm going to quote richly from Mr. Berliner's testimony, because he's an insider.
Yes.
He's a whistleblower.
Now, will you be asked questions as well at the hearing, or just the statements? There's a Q&A as well, isn't there?
No, there's a lot of questions. In fact,
okay.
the statement is just five minutes, and then... So I have Marjorie Taylor Greene and Representative Cloud
and Tim Burchett from Tennessee. These are all good people. But on the other side, they have Jasmine Crockett from Texas. You may have heard of her.
Yeah, wait. You say from Texas, but guess where she grew up? Right here in St. Louis. She went to she went to a very fancy private school. She's such a fraud, Mike. She is such a fraud.
I heard about her fancy school. If she knew the very bad middle school, the junior high that I went to in Queens, New York, I bet there's no comparison between that school and hers.
I promise you there's not. I promise you. So she's an interesting representative. So when you give your opening statement, though, because I don't see any justification at this point to subsidize NPR and PBS. I don't even know how this will be a hard case to make. But what would you handicap the possibility of that actually happening in the near future becoming? We've talked about defunding NPR and PBS for a while. Obviously, you have the right people in power right now. Do you think it might happen?
If it doesn't happen now, it's never going to happen.
That's right.
We have on record the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. We have Elon Musk, the head of Doge. We have the National Security Advisor, Mike Waltz. All of them saying recently they have to be defunded. They have to be defunded. If it doesn't happen now, when there's a vibe shift, not just a vibe shift, but a paradigm shift, it will never happen. My conservative grandchildren are going to be growing up with NPR and PBS.
So don't they always say, oh, you know what, it's just a small portion of what we actually take in at PBS
right.
and NPR. And then my response will be, well, then you're not going to miss it very much, are you?
I for the record here, you have not read my testimony, but that's exactly in my testimony. But also, that is smoke and mirrors, because what they say is, well, 70% of the money the CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, gets goes to the 1,500 local radio and TV stations. But guess what? That's true, by the way. They're not lying. But these 1,500 public TV and radio stations have to turn around and buy NPR and PBS programming. It's a shell game.
It is a shell game. There's no doubt. And I can't wait for you to highlight it. So I wanted you to talk about, and by the way, I think you were going to join us last week when you were in Panama, and that was going above and beyond, and I appreciate you being willing to do that. We had a preempt because Donald Trump was doing something, as so often is the case. But you talked about, and I didn't give a lot of topic time to this here on this show, Mike. I read about it. I know about it. But they brought down the Black Lives Matter Plaza in Washington, D.C., and I wanted you to address that because obviously here in St. Louis in 2014 with Mike Brown, some of this was all kicked off, all the nonsense with Black Lives Matter. So explain what happened there in D.C. with that plaza.
Well, listen, actually, Ferguson is the birthplace. Even though Black Lives Matter was officially begun in 2013 as a hashtag, it was at Ferguson when you had months of riots and you have everybody come from all over the world, including hundreds of Palestinians. And Alicia Garza and Opal Tometi and Patrice Cullors descended, and then they became an organization there. They organized, and that is, so Ferguson really is the kickoff.
Absolutely.
But then, that's when you have the start of the use of all this language, systemic racism, oppressive society, you know, white supremacy, blah, blah, blah. All of this begins in 2014. Before that, the media was not ever using these terms. After that, you see a hockey stick. After you, thank you, after Ferguson, you see a hockey stick uptick in the use of these terms in the media. And then in 2020, when you had the real riots all over the country, and we veered, we could have lost the country. And then Muriel Bowser, the mayor of D.C., defiantly created Black Lives Matter Plaza in front of the White House, starting at H and 16. You know, the White House is on 16th Street. And this shows the difference between the first Trump administration and this one. She is not defiant anymore. She's no longer rebellious. She's afraid they're going to take away her home rule because Congress can do that. And she tore it down. Black Lives Matter Plaza is no longer.
It's kind of amazing, though. Like, this thing was 48 feet tall and was stretching over a couple of city blocks, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It began at each. It began right in front of the White House by Lafayette Park, and it went two blocks.
So, what do you make of that beyond just the symbolism? Because that is an interesting moment. Obviously, not everyone's happy with that. But was she just basically forced into doing that in order to have her city continue to get money from the federal government?
I think she did it on her own. You know, she wants to continue to misrule the city. The city is dangerous. Misruled Union Station, which is used to be a national landmark filled with restaurants. You can no longer go there. They shot somebody dead there 2 weeks ago. She wants to continue to misrule, apply the blue governance to our nation's capital. She wants to continue to make it unlivable. And so she decided that the way that what she needed to do was get rid of Black Lives Matter Plaza to see if she could get some cover for that.
Wow.
But it shows, it actually, the symbolism is huge, Mark, because it shows BLM was iconic. BLM had this iconic power. That's no longer the case. The country woke up in 2021. They said, we don't like these DEI training. This is tyrannical. We don't like what's happening with gender. We don't like what's happening with race. And there were public, there were protests everywhere. And for example, Virginia's elected Glenn Youngkin.
Absolutely.
On the strength of this.
Yeah.
Forget this in 2021. I don't call Virginia a purple state anymore. It's a blue state with two Democratic senators. One of them was very liberal, Tim Kaine. So I think that this shows where the country's headed. I'm not saying it's going to be headed there forever. You know, it's in Washington, as you know, there are no permanent defeats and no permanent victories. The devil is always continuing to fight, and you have to continue to fight the devil. But this is, the country's now on the mend as far as this is concerned. I think
you're right about that, Mike Gonzalez. Thanks for coming on here this afternoon. Good luck on Wednesday. I can't wait. I hope they televise that because I want to see that testimony. Keep us posted.
Oh, I'll be on TV. Don't worry.
All right. Thanks, Mike. We'll see you. That's going to be awesome. Let's defund PBS and NPR now. Peter Zane from Real Clear Investigations coming up in the next hour. We'll also visit with Tom Ackerman, who is over on the Cardinals Radio Network in KMOX. We'll talk some Cardinals baseball with him. But right now, Frank Cusimano from KSDK, who was at the Kilmeade event on Saturday night. Hope you had a good time. How are you this afternoon, Frank?
Mark, it was great. I think you have a second career in the world of acting. You were unbelievable on stage. What a command you had, presence, you had it all.
Right, yeah, for the 45 seconds in my parts, it was quite something. I'm surprised I haven't been, you know, awarded with an Oscar. But no, it was a fun show. And Brian, that guy, he works so damn hard. Frank, he's really, really impressive, and I loved what he was able to do. But let's talk about the Blues, because holy moly, it wasn't too long ago we were talking about the Blues losing and injuries, and boy, this season has sucked ever since this Four Nations. You talked about it on Friday, but it's only gotten better since Friday, hasn't it?
It has. The win streak is up to 6 in a row. They play Montreal tomorrow night. I think it's going to be 7. Then Nashville on Thursday, I think it's going to be 8. I've never felt this confident about the Blues, or the last time I felt this confident about the Blues was in 2019.
It just
seems like they can't lose. And the third period has really been a great stat for them. The Blues have outscored the opposition 8-3 if you count overtimes in the last four games. So if you are owning the third period, you're going to win a lot of games. And here's the best stat. It's about a month ago, they had about a 2% chance of making the postseason. And I just looked it up. It's now up to 52% chance. They are up 4 points, although they have played 3 more games than the Flames.
So not out of the woods yet, but trending exceptionally well.
Yep, that's a good way to put it.
All right, well, that's good. That's encouraging. It's a lot of fun. It's exciting. We'll talk a little bit with that with Tom Ackerman in the next hour as well. But here we are. Well, let me touch on college basketball. It's pretty much over for everyone around here. Illinois couldn't beat Kentucky. We know Mizzou took a crap. By the way, the coach from Drake just took the gig at Iowa, didn't he, Frank?
Yeah, Ben McCollum took the job at Iowa. No surprise at all. There's only so much you can do at Drake. And then if he goes to Iowa, he'll have that Big Ten conference. He'll have tremendous name, image, and likeness money. And he probably went from maybe making $600,000 to $700,000 a year to maybe $4 or $5 million a year.
Wow.
And he deserves every penny of it. I don't know if there's a better head coach in America.
And he didn't even have to really move. I mean, Drake's in Des Moines, right? He's just going down the road. Not too far.
Yeah, but he's from Yep, and he's going home. He's from the state of Iowa.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well, let's talk baseball here, Frank, because obviously we had some roster decisions that were made. We were hoping, and you said, look, Victor Scott's going to be the starting center fielder. He is. Any thoughts about the final roster? And as we're about to begin this campaign, and with our fingers crossed, I would say, here in St. Louis.
Well, I like the fact that Matthew Liberatore is in the starting rotation and Steven Matz is out of the bullpen. Liberatore's velocity went up even higher in spring. He was being clocked at 98. But I'll say this, if you are going to say it's a reset season and you're going to go with the youth, and the best pitcher in the spring, without a doubt, is Michael McGreevy with an ERA of about 1, and he was really good in his starts last year. I don't know how he's starting the season in Memphis and not in St. Louis. So we'll see him before long, but I'd like to see him right now.
Hey, Frank, Ethan here. One of the announcements that they made yesterday also is that beginning on April 16th, after the first couple of weeks of the season, they're going to be using a 6-man starting rotation. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, you know, they certainly don't need it now with all the days off early in the season. I guess it's a way of keeping Steven Matz, you know, stretched out. I don't know if you need it, or you could look at it this way. The guy at the top has worried everybody, and that's Sonny Gray. He's been terrible in the spring. He's not exactly an innings eater to begin with. So maybe if you keep him on 5 innings, you can, that 6-man rotation is more doable.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we're all just kind of hoping for hope at this point, aren't we?
I think they had a press conference this morning, or not a press conference, but Mo met with the media, and they mentioned that Sonny's been having some flu-like illness, and he's been really weak as a result. So he said he's feeling better. So I don't know if maybe that's why they're saying that the velo has been down, but I don't know, maybe something to keep an eye on heading into the opening day start.
Yeah, you know, most people don't think there's a big difference when you're driving a car. You shouldn't be driving a car 91 to 93. But there is a big difference when you're throwing a baseball. And when he's like at 90 miles an hour and over the plate, that's batting practice. You know, last year he was 93, 94, 95. Yeah, it's frightening. It's scary to what we've seen out of him in spring training, particularly with his velocity.
Well, we got to play the games, and opening day is Thursday. Hopefully the weather will cooperate. I think the weather forecast is pretty good right now, and Frank will talk on Friday. Appreciate it. Have a great night.
Thank you, sir.
A lot of concern, Ethan. A lot of concern. But it's going to be good to have baseball back, right?
At least for that one day. You have the Clydesdales.
I think longer than that.
You have the Red Jackets. No, I'm saying you can almost, like, regardless of how the baseball goes on opening day,
yeah,
you can enjoy just the tradition of what St. Louis Cardinals baseball is, and that's always fun.
I know, but, you know, we're going to think things are going to get real rough. If this first couple of weeks results in, you know, a lopsided record where we can't win any games, I think things will tailspin very quickly when it comes to the fans and lack of support.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen. We'll take a break here at the top of the hour. We'll talk a little bit more about the Cardinals. He was down in Jupiter at spring training for several weeks. Tommy Ackerman over on the KMOX side. We'll touch on some hoops and some blues as well. Peter Zane, who is an editor at Real Clear Investigations. He writes for Real Clear Politics. He's one of my favorite, you know, really thinking political types. We'll talk about how, and I have several really interesting pieces this afternoon about what path the Democrats might have out of the wilderness. Here's some good news, ladies and gentlemen. There's not a good one. And by the way, if there was a good one, they don't plan on taking it. But Peter will weigh in on that coming up after Fox News.